Welcome to this edition of the Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gibson. This series captures some of the outstanding learning and outreach opportunities available here at Pepperdine. Each episode features interviews with exceptional members of our community and the special people who visit our campus.
Thank you for joining us for episode 58 of Pepperdine People. I'm Pete Peterson from the School of Public Policy, and I'm joined today by Dennis Donahue. Until recently, Dennis was the three-term mayor for the city of Salinas, and he was and is the president of Royal Rose, a specialty vegetable grower based in Salinas. Dennis, it's great to have you.
Good to be here.
Maybe a good place to start, as we have an audience that is familiar with California, but many others may not be. Tell us a little bit about Salinas, how large it is, sure. Where it's located, a little bit about what makes it unique.
Well, the tail end of your introduction is one of the ways a lot of folks know Salinas is the salad bowl of the world. We're also noted for being John Steinbeck's hometown,
right.
One of North America's six Nobel laureates. And then some of the things that I think surprise Salinas, which is about 60 miles south of San Jose, 100 miles south of San Francisco, where the county seat of Monterey County.
Okay.
And I didn't realize this until I became the mayor of the city, but we're about the 150th largest city in the country. Who knew? But I think one of the things that distinguishes us is we have an ag or a rural component, but we have a real urban component as well in all the levels of complexities that a much larger city like a San Jose might have. So it's my hometown. I was always passionate about it, but I think those characteristics make it a fascinating city.
Absolutely. I think one of the interesting things about your connections to public service is that you became mayor after being very involved on a local level in some ways that connect to the unique history and culture of Salinas. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about how you even came to thinking about running
sure.
for elected office.
Well, as I told your students when we had a chance to visit, I was an accidental mayor. I had never planned on this. And I think there were really two dynamics that led to that office. One, Salinas as a city has an absolutely terrific civic tradition of volunteerism, community engagement. And I started down that road myself, and I got involved in working with young students and tutoring. And really one of the things I found is that when you begin to serve, it leads you to unexpected places. And concurrent with that service, I got re-engaged with the city that my dad was the recreation park director. So I really wasn't an ag kid. I was a city hall kid. And the city was really struggling with its financial capacity. And it was my view that the things the city does, the services it provides are important to people. But that needed to be re-explained. And those troubles and those difficulties ultimately led to Salinas being faced with closing its libraries.
Mm.
And
which is rather ironic for
it is. You know, I've kind of joked over the years, you know, we were – as a community, we were going to get single-handedly blamed for, you know, the demise of Western civilization because John Steinbeck's hometown was going to close its libraries. You know, that just couldn't stand. And fortunately,
right.
it didn't.
Right. With a lot of the role that you played
right.
there. So that really drew you into
right.
really the civic sphere, the public sphere
right.
in Salinas. But there's a step there from there to really thinking about running for elected office.
So. Well, you know, I frankly cut my teeth on a number of tax measures. And the last one was the effort to save the libraries. In fact, it took two takes.
Mm.
But in that process, I had an opportunity – to work with a really energized community. And what's terrific, particularly about libraries, because that was really the calling card, the driving force to get Salinians to invest in the community to save the libraries, is, you know, libraries really touch everyone. And so all of that came out of the woodwork locally, nationally, and even internationally. And I was honored to be recognized by the California Library Association with their President's Award, which they don't give every year. It's a discretionary award. So that was all the more honor. But as I accepted it, I made it very, very clear. I just simply was accepting on behalf of hundreds, if not thousands, of people who got involved in that effort. And in that effort, you know, I was really energized and excited by what happens when people come together to do something positive and move a community, and I like that. And in that process, I saw the mayor's role and said, I kind of like what she's doing. I wonder if I could do that. And I kind of played with it a little bit mentally and decided I'd like to try. And that turned out okay.
We just had you speak with students up at the School of Public Policy. And one of the points you made about this transition from activist, essentially, to running for political office was that you made the point to students that they really, if they are thinking about running for political office, it really is most important that they have a passion for a subject matter or some issue in the community, rather than just saying, I want to be mayor, I want to be congressman or woman, you know, that you really want to be connected to something that you want to get done.
No, that's exactly right. And I think what's important to note, I in that same talk I had mentioned, I'd heard a talk recently, heard Craig Barrett speak, the former chair of Intel, and he was talking about education. But he also said, you know, it is better to accomplish one small thing than leave many great things unplanned. Mm-hmm. And the point of that is you have to start specifically, because that's what gets people's attention. That's what engages you. You cannot, you know, the likelihood of the generic, I just want to be the mayor or I want to be on city council, you know, an informed electorate is going to quite properly ask why.
Right.
And there needs to be an answer. And it doesn't have to be 20 different things. You know, I feel this is important. Boom, boom, boom. And in my case, I think the libraries were a calling card. But it also spoke to a concern I had prior to being elected during my time in office, and I still have, is, you know, I believe people value city services. I think they're willing to pay a fair price for that. But people are quite honestly kind of confused and concerned about everything they're hearing about government. And as we discussed, I don't think really the issue is government so much as it is cost and duplication, because I think people like services – certainly that cities provide, because I think they understand them and they impact them pretty directly. So I liked being an advocate for the city and services, and I certainly understand the concern residents have about, they want them efficiently and effectively provided. And, you know, as Bill Shakespeare would say, there's the rub. That's always going to be the challenge.
Right. Well, and I think to change gears slightly, I think one of the interesting things about your role as mayor, and so the listeners know, you ran and were elected three times and you decided not to run for a fourth term. That really was purely your decision. That your leadership style is really one of collaboration. And I think one of the important things for the students at the School of Public Policy to learn was really that in coming up against policy issues and challenges, whether that be in the public safety issue, area around gangs, whether that be around economic development, whether that be around parks and recreation, that you didn't purely see these challenges as being something that City Hall itself had to address.
Right.
You really looked for partners in other levels of government and also in the private and civic sector. And I wonder, maybe we could just drill down on the gang issue and the relationship with the Naval Postgraduate School, but talk a little bit about your leadership philosophy there.
Well, you know, I learned a lot, and I probably got even smarter towards the end. And now that I'm out of office, I didn't always do it perfectly, but you're exactly right. In hindsight and with clear reflection, that is how you move a community forward, with as many of the stakeholders as possible working together towards the desired outcome. And, you know, government is not the sole answer for a number of things, or it can't necessarily be the sole supplier of the answer. So, for instance, if you take the gang issue, clearly there's a law enforcement component, but the reality is it's got to involve families, it's got to involve education, it involves the nonprofit sector. One of the things I was particularly proud of was I made a very conscious effort to bring the faith community into that issue on a more structured, direct basis, because, you know, a lot of that discussion is a values-based discussion.
Right.
And certainly in the civic arena, in the public square, we ought to be talking about values, and I certainly understand that many people that might not have a formal faith or any faith in particular love their city and are just great people. But the faith community we do know has a stated objective day in and day out of being about changing people's lives, changing people's hearts, and it's a values-based business, so to speak. So right. I thought it was important to engage them. So it really does take all the people working together that will help the community achieve its desired outcome. And I think the mayor's role is to be catalytic or supportive. I mean, you know,
in some ways, you were really I like that word catalytic. In other ways, you were kind of a convener of conversations where you were really the point person, but it was really a matter of bringing the right people to the table.
Right.
And in some ways to show them that there was a common interest. I'm sure that there were some projects where people may not have been at the table with the mayor thinking about public policy and how and their role in it.
You know, it's interesting. I sometimes look back on my time in office and I think the one thing I did pretty well was I understood who needed to be in the room to get an outcome. And frankly, and as I left office, I got very, very committed personally and philosophically to this idea of servant leadership that, you know, I arguably more often than not could be the least important person in the room. But my role, I think, is to make sure the right people were.
And I think that's one of the other interesting points. I wasn't even thinking about this prior to starting the interview, but the point that you made that there is a person in the office, but there's also the office,
right?
And understanding where those are connected and where those aren't.
It's a really fine line. When we were joking, talking to the students about when electeds are often introduced as dignitaries. You know, with all due respect to my former colleagues and peers, you know, the only thing that's the dignitary component flows from the public.
Right.
You know, I like to tell people because occasionally I'd be in there late at night by myself and I'd sit in that chair and I'd go, you know, I couldn't put me here.
Right.
And I can't keep me here.
Right.
So it's always important to understand that. Now, that said, it's also important to understand what the office means to the community. So, you know, you had a student that asked me, what did I do to engage the community? One of the things I did was I tried to be very, very visible in the community, not because I was important, but I understood that people liked to see the mayor and that if the mayor is accessible, then City Hall is accessible.
I want to close with the work that you're doing now, because obviously it wasn't as if at the last day of your term you said, well, I'm no longer going to participate deeply in a community that you were born and raised into, which is this connection between government, private sector, and the civic sector around economic development, and particularly this Steinbeck Innovation Cluster.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about
that. Well, I'm really excited about that. I still remember when I first announced for office and talking about selling Salinas, and my goal was really I had it in mind to connect the Salinas Valley with the Silicon Valley, one, because it's logical.
Right.
You know, that the world's greatest economic engine, you know, that frankly history's ever seen is right up the road and we're the only valley that's really contiguous to it. So it seemed to me that ought to be an opportunity and it made a lot of sense. And so that's something I have always been working on while I was in office. But in recent months, that accelerated because our largest non-ag employer pulled out. And so to help mitigate that impact, we were given some dollars. And so we were able to more directly engage a key organization in the Silicon Valley. And we're working hard to have a privately led, publicly supported game plan for the area. And essentially, we're going to leverage their investment and innovation capacity with our global production and fresh processing platform and rub those sticks together around precision agriculture. And when you do that, you're in a really unique position for global leadership.
But again, that takes understanding the assets that Silicon Valley brings to the table, but also the Salinas Valley.
Absolutely.
You are the Salad Bowl to the world and the relationships that the businesses within Salinas have with the world as a distribution center, much less as a growing center, are really fantastic.
Yeah. It's and on the surface, it makes a lot of sense. And the end game for the months and years ahead will – the devil's in the details. Because, you know, ultimately it's about money changing hands and jobs being created and new young companies being formed. And I think that's pretty exciting stuff. And where you have wealth – and one of the things I was always proud of, Salinas, is where we've had prosperity, we've had unfailing generosity in our community. So my experience is where you have wealth, where you have prosperity – you have community involvement, and cities move forward.
I think that's a good place to wrap. Yeah. Dennis, thanks so much for joining us. We've been talking to Dennis Donahue, three-term mayor for the city of Salinas. And this has been Pete Peterson for Pepperdine People. Thanks for listening.